Welcome to the Greg and Flanagan Show. Coming at you a little late tonight because of the softball game. Congratulations on the girls from preventing a sweep. And welcome to the show. It's a lovely evening. There's a lot of activity going on. Of course, they're trucking away in the Crimson White newsroom. Big shout out to all the people keeping it alive in there. Also, the Battle of the Bands at the Ferguson Center. If anybody has an idea, I had to leave. Unfortunately, I missed Deacon Green and Rojambeau, but if somebody is you know, in that area or something, they want to give me a call and let me know who wins the Battle of the Bands over there at the Ferg Theater, 348-6082. Be glad to get you on the air and let you, you know, as long as you keep it within FCC regulations. It's all gravy. But welcome to the show. Going to get Matt Scalici on the air in just a second. Matt, you actually just stepped in the studio. Welcome.
What's going on?
Not much. You know, same old, same old. As you can see, the package is here.
That's right. We're making a DVD swap tonight.
Excellent. There it is, the brick.
The box.
Nice. Godfather collection. Very nice. Can I take a look at that?
Go ahead, man. It's a nice little get up there.
Is this one of the prized possessions of your collection?
Absolutely, as you would expect from a guy named Scalici. But
right,
it's also a great for people who like the film as much as I do. The whole trilogy, really. It's a great package because it has full length audio commentary by Coppola on all three films, and one of the better director commentaries, I think, out there on
really?
DVDs. Yeah.
Why do you say that? What makes it so great?
Well, I mean, first of all, he does what you would typically want, which is, you know, what I watch director commentaries for, which is sort of point out some interesting technical points on all three films, which there are certainly many of, especially on the first two. But you know, particularly the third film is very personal for Coppola, all three of these films really. And you know, to get the take from somebody who was as personally involved in the films as a guy like Coppola was, it's some pretty good insights. He doesn't hold back, especially in the third film. He talks a lot about, you know, the negative attention that Sophia got for her.
He does.
Oh yeah.
So, and this is a pretty juicy commentary, basically.
It's an interesting commentary. It really is, and it's you know, it's worth watching just for the commentary, really.
Well, do you think that this movie, you know, it got a lot of negative, of course, man, it got a lot of negative attention, and it was, the expectations in 90 when it was released were surely through the roof. And
this is really unprecedented before and since to have a film and its sequel to both be, you know, praised as two of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah. It's actually, I mean, I can't really think of that many others in the same situation. Personally, I believe the Back to the Future, all the installments are equally terrific.
Excellent.
You know?
Oh yeah, that's also a good DVD set.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when you ask about the third film, I'm a big defender of part three.
Yeah.
I think people who watch all three of them together, that's, you know, I had the advantage of the first time I've had sort of the ideal Godfather experience for somebody who was born outside of when they were released, which I saw the first time I ever saw the first Godfather film was in the Alabama Theater in Birmingham, one of the best places to watch a movie, in my opinion.
Anywhere.
And great, great atmosphere there. And
when was this?
This was actually, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago. When they still do this during the summer. They'll show classic films.
They do a really good job.
And so that's the first time I ever saw it. And then I've seen two on TV before I bought the DVD set, but I'd never seen three until I got the DVD set. So I watched one, you know, went on sort of a rampage, watched one and two and three on all the same weekend. And I think when put in context like that, three does not stand alone like the first two can as a great film.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you put it in the context of those first two films and in the situation of this is the final chapter of this family drama.
Yeah.
I think it's a really great way to end the series. It's to me the most moving chapter when you're talking about, you know, the Corleone family part of it. Obviously, you know, the first two films sort of have greater significance in themselves. They're
right.
Sort of about American politics and stuff like that. But if you just want to talk about this, you know, this family situation that Coppola had set up in the first two films, I don't think you could have put a better third chapter on it than he does.
Well, yeah, I look forward to, you know, I've seen the first movie and I've seen the third movie. The, granted, these are a long, it was a long time ago, and I've seen bits and pieces of the second movie, and I really look forward to checking out the box set, and I appreciate it. And also, I've got for you Hard Boiled and Hard Eight, the hard double pack.
All right.
So enjoy, and all especially right. I'd like to say that the commentary track on Hard Eight is fantastic.
Oh, there's a commentary track.
Yes, there is. And
is it by Paul Thomas Anderson?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got a it's great. You know, because I remember one of the first DVD commentaries I ever heard. First one I ever heard was Soderbergh and Lim Dobbs on The Limey. Just a trivia note ever that I ever heard. But yeah, this is a, it's a really terrific commentary track, and Boogie Nights is also excellent as well.
Oh yeah, that's a great commentary track.
There's a good one with the cast and crew, and then there's a good one with Paul Thomas Anderson by himself. So enjoy those, man.
I will. I'm sure.
Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about it. I want to talk. I mean, you know, The Godfather's on my brain. Like we were talking about earlier, the Easy Rider's Raging Bull's book and
yeah,
films of the 70s. And I've been trying to go back and educate, you know, see the key movies I haven't had a chance to see. So we'll talk about that. But right now, let's talk about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, yeah.
Which just opened.
Now, have you gotten a chance to see it yet?
I saw it Saturday night in a theater.
In New York.
In New York on 42nd Street in Times awesome. Square. In a really terrific theater. The huge screen. The print was great. The sound was great. And the chairs, you know, it was unbelievable. They treat you nice up there.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I had the fortune of seeing it Saturday night. Of course, everybody probably read your review, which I forgot to tell you, it made U-Wire.
I did see that it got picked up on the wire, yeah.
Good job. So people all over the country enjoying your perspective on it.
Hopefully, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I pretty much, when you get to something that just blows you away like that, it's hard to write a review that can really convince people of how strongly you feel about it. But, you know, obviously I will bow to Michel Gondry humbly after putting some skepticism towards him last week. I think I clearly do see his influence on this film as opposed to the two Spike Jonze films.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to call it the Gondry part of it better, but I think for this film, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I said in the review, it's sort of everybody, it's one of these films, like I always bring up The Third Man when I'm talking about these films. It's filmmakers and actors and actresses that all necessarily aren't, you know, consistent great workers all the time, but they just seem to all hit their mark at the same time. And this, I think, historically is going to be looked back at as probably Kaufman at his best, Gondry at his best, and all the cast at their best.
Would you say that this is the best movie to be released in 2004 thus far?
Oh, so far, I'd say without a doubt. I mean, I think you have to sort of put the passion aside.
I was going
to
say, if you had to stop and make your top 10 list, what would be higher right now, The Passion or Eternal Sunshine right now?
You know, this would be one of those decisions in my head that I wouldn't
think about who's listening.
I wouldn't know how to make this decision if I had to, because you know, it's two different types of film to watch. You know, on the one hand, you've got this epic, you know, really dramatic sort of film, and then this other film is sort of the best of, you know, in the same vein as Lost in Translation, although quite different in many ways.
So you kind of feel like there's this Lord of the Rings, Lost in Translation.
Exactly, that's exactly what I'm getting
split.
At. I wouldn't know where to go, but it's, I mean, I'll say it's far and away better than anything else I'm expecting to see for the rest of the year.
Well, there's The Aviator.
I know you're high on The Aviator.
Don't forget about that.
Yeah.
But I guess you could just say it's just great to have two really, you know, terrific movies, four-star movies in the theaters at such a period in the year.
It really shocked me. I think I mentioned that in my article, too, that this movie was released in April. I guess you're not going to sit on a piece this great for that long.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think they could have had it out by the Oscar date.
You would think. But you know, maybe they felt like they, you know, it was already crowded this season.
Yeah.
But, you know, it certainly has happened before. You know, the last one I can think of really that was released this early to get a lot of Oscar recognition was Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, and also Fargo was released relatively early in the year in '96,
yeah,
and still had, you know, the juice at the end of the year. So sometimes it happens.
Yeah, it can happen, and I think when the rest of the crop comes out this year, Ben's trying to make his way in here.
Yep.
I think, you know, I've been high on my expectation for 2004. I think there's a lot of great films still to come out. But I think most of the films that are still on their way are very commercial.
Mm.
You know, as good as I expect them to be, you know, things like Troy, and I personally think Shyamalan deserves some Oscar recognition. You know, I'm a little higher on him than a lot of people are, but I think Signs probably should have gotten at least a nod for something.
For what?
I thought the screenplay was great, actually. And I thought it was interesting.
The whole water thing,
too.
You like that?
Well, I realize it's a little hokey for some people, but it's great. It's a great spin on you know, what is otherwise pretty lame horror sci-fi that's being put out there for the most part by studios.
That picture had its moments, but I just thought it was miscast.
Did you buy it?
Well, originally, Mark Ruffalo was attached to play the role that Joaquin Phoenix eventually played.
I can see. I mean, those two actors sort of strike me as rather similar to begin with.
But, yeah.
But, anyway, I think the Academy always does like to show itself as being independent-minded and not necessarily a slave to the studios, and I think that's going to work to Eternal Sunshine's advantage when all the rest of the films that will be considered Oscar contenders are probably going to be big budget studio films.
Well, I'd hope that, you know, since the Oscars, especially with we're talking about Oscars, the visual effects. Are you on there, Ben? Can you hear us? Okay, let's see. Get your mic. Yeah, go ahead. Hang on, let's see here. Go ahead. I'm not getting Ben. Hang on. Go ahead.
Now.
There we go.
Yeah? Okay, there you are. It's complicated. Regarding the Oscars and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, the visual effects category is usually and has been dominated by CGI-driven movies and effects. And now, with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, basically Michelle Gondry has pulled out this bag of tricks that in many cases that aren't CGI at all.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that it has a chance to sneak in there and compete with, you know, of course Troy's going to be in there,
right,
and God knows what else?
Well, you know, I think you have to sort of change the way the Academy looks at that term, special effects, nowadays. You know, they've sort of have turned that into who has the best CGI. That's sort of become what the award is all about. But I think, you know, there's only so many times we can see big CGI armies running across an open field attacking each other. And, you know, I don't think Troy is going to be recognized as groundbreaking special effects. But you've got little subtleties, I think, that, you know, if enough Academy people out there do see this movie for what it is, they're gonna pick up these subtle things in this movie that are just contribute to this overall sort of dream state that we get for this whole movie that's just fantastic.
Well, special effects-wise, what was the most impressive scene of the movie to you? What was your favorite gimmick or trick?
Well,
what sticks out in your mind right now?
You know, there's several great perspective shots when Jim Carrey's is regressing into his childhood, becomes a little kid. There's a couple of good ones of him moving from one room into another without cutting, and there's completely different sets. He'll move from another
store,
like a Barnes and Noble, into a room in his friend's
living
house.
Room, yeah.
And it all has to be one set. And so, you know, those are practical special effects, but they're visually great to look at. And also, there's one that I almost didn't pick up, that there's a scene where Jim Carrey's character is walking behind a TV, and on this TV screen, it's like it's a window.
Yes.
And yet
we were talking about that earlier.
Exactly. You can see exactly what you'd be seeing if there was nothing there.
Right.
But the TV screen itself is showing what's on the other side of it in perfect perspective, so it lines up. It's a great little trick.
We'll see this caller. Yes, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Graham.
Yes.
What is playing at the Ferg?
Oh, the Ferg. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I will call you back and let you know. I don't have that information, but I'll call you back.
Okay.
All right. Then, you know, everybody's curious about movies. Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
Well, let me ask you this, Ben. The box office for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind was not very strong this week. I think it made about $6 million. Is that right?
Eight.
$8 million. Okay, but it was in sixth place.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? What do you think that this movie kind of is going? Do you think that you know, it got gypped, or why do you think it didn't make this much money? And do you think that through word of mouth, its box office will increase as the weeks go on?
I don't think word of mouth. I don't think many people are going to pick up on it. The commercial appeal isn't there. I mean, it's got a familiar cast. It's got Jim Carrey, but for the regular kids that like Jim Carrey, this is an R-rated picture. You know, and all the Jim Carrey fans that go out there, they aren't going to let their kids go see an R-rated Jim Carrey movie.
Yeah, and, is he done?
Yeah.
I actually had a similar experience. You, Graham, obviously probably had the better experience here. I saw this movie at the Fox 12, and I was really the only person in the theater that enjoyed the movie. I walked out of there.
I thought you were going to say in the theater, period.
Oh, no. But I was the only person in there that came out of there enjoying the movie, except for the person I was with. And all the other people were sort of middle-aged couples. There were either people going in because they thought it was a romantic comedy, and they hated it because it wasn't, you know, the same reason that a lot of people are saying that people are going to rent Lost in Translation now and are not liking it.
How did you pick up on that, that they weren't enjoying the movie?
That they said that was garbage. That was
garbage.
Awful. And, you know, walking out of there. And the other guy, the other reaction I heard was a guy, maybe college age, probably a little bit older, who was probably going because it was a Jim Carrey movie, mm-hmm. and expected it to be
The Mask.
Goofball. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, sometimes there are movies that are made for people like the three of us in here that the mass audiences just aren't going to enjoy. And Ebert, I don't know if you guys read, like, his answer manual.
Oh, man, the Lost in Translation.
Right, that's what I was bringing
ahead.
Up.
He's got a great quote. Did you see that, Ben?
I don't. You can pull up his quote if you want. I don't really remember. But he was talking about, there's a guy wrote in that said he owns a video store, and people are renting Lost in Translation, and he says about 99% of the people that have rented this movie have come back not liking it. And I have to say, you know, my parents, who are, you know, they're not big movie people, but they, you know, they sort of support anything I'm into, you know, they were up on the Oscar movies this year, asking me which ones they needed to see. And I told them Lost in Translation, and they didn't really like it either. And I think they're, you know, this is mostly my opinion. This is a product, and I think Ebert says the same thing. This is a product of the movie industry conditioning most people for so long to go to the movies and have everything spelled out for them.
Let me tell you what this quote is, and Ebert, you know,
Ebert's a little harsher than I would.
Let me tell you, and I agree, and I just think it's a great way to. And this applies what he says about the people that have been negative towards Lost in Translation like this. I think you can apply it to people that have been negative to a lot of movies that just, you know, obviously, like, maybe in my opinion, Steven Soderbergh's Solaris, that people just trash. But
right.
Here's what he said. He said, okay. He says that when people hate Lost in Translation, he has to restrain himself from replying, "You're saying more about yourself than about the film." And that's something that I agree with a lot. I mean,
whereas Ebert says, you know, Ebert tends to react a little quicker to say it's the moviegoer's fault. And
I say it is.
I say, but honestly,
perfect,
though,
man.
I think it's more the fault of the movie studios for so long conditioning us, and for the past decade, really since, you know, and as much as I love Spielberg, he's probably more to blame than anybody of making this big budget revolution where people go to see the movies that are marketed to them. They don't. It's not the 60s and 70s anymore where people will go to a film without knowing anything about it. This is, I want to go see something blow up, and I want to hear it's going to blow before I see it. You know, it's people are used to routines and formulas and having every detail of the plot and what's going on in the characters' minds told to them, and rather than have to figure it out themselves. And, you know, I think that's, you know, it's unfortunate that that's the way it's happened, but I think it's more the fault of the studios than you know, I don't think necessarily everybody is cut out to go to the movies with an analytical mind. Most people do want to go and have a good time, and these new movies that are, you know, that 10 years ago would have been limited release, nobody would have heard of them except the Sundance crowd. Movies like Solaris and Lost in Translation are getting attention now because big stars are doing these little independent scripts. And so, you know, people want to go see a movie with Bill Murray, but it's not the kind of movie that mass audiences are conditioned, are prepared to see.
Well, I think a lot of people, though, that hear, you know, Bill Murray, he's supposed to be, like a lot of, you know, just normal middle class, upper middle class adults or whatever that have seen this movie and then been disappointed with it. They read in the Times or wherever they read that they read Bill Murray is great in this and he's unlike anything he's ever you know you've ever seen him in before, and then they go see it and they're disappointed because it's slow or whatever, nothing happens, whatever their complaint is. What else do they complain about that you know of? Have you heard any specific complaints about Lost in Translation? But so they hear they say these things, but. So, obviously, they weren't going in there expecting The Man Who Knew Too Little. You know, they heard it was going to be
right.
Different. And there. So,
but I think as much as people are going into these movies expecting it to be different and a little strange, I don't think the vast majority of audiences are really prepared to go in here and read a character. They're not used to going to the movies and, you know, they'll say that they're going to be open-minded by this, but I don't think... I just don't think most people know how to go into a movie and not sit back and have it shown to them. I don't think, you know, I think it's just it goes against the average moviegoer's instinct to watch it like they would be watching a normal person in real life and try to read things into it themselves, which is what it's really required of you in Lost in Translation and I think in Eternal Sunshine.
Well, I think that Lost in Translation is really, in a lot of ways, you can just... Like, and I consider 2001 a movie like this also. You can just turn it on and just leave it on. You know, it's very, it's just...
It does have that quality to it, too.
And, you know, you can sit there and watch it and enjoy the performances. Of course, you know, I advise people and recommend to pay attention to the movie
right.
And not just leave it on in their kitchen. But, you know, I don't know. I don't understand it. And I hope... But see, Lost in Translation had a large buzz and large word of mouth and made a lot of money towards the end there and got it back in theaters. But I don't know if, like Ben said, that the buzz, the word of mouth is going to get that strong on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Let's take a little break and come back. We're having a few commercials. Come back, and we got a lot to talk about. Of course, a little segment that we started last week where we talk about what we've been checking out, all three of us, on our own time. And discuss that. And also, I'm sure you've got a list of deals and movie news.
I got some movie news I might want to pick through here. Get
okay.
A couple of good ones.
Of course, Mel Gibson's news. I hope you have something on his new project.
I do.
On
the Maccabees.
Indeed. Well, this is the Graham Flanagan Show. We'll be right back.
Tired of not being able to enjoy good times on the lake or spending your day around a polluted river? Would you like to help prevent pollution for Earth and save the planet? Well, don't think that you can't help out in some way. You alone can have a great impact on stormwater management by getting involved, attending public meetings, voicing your concerns, and supporting the goals and objectives of the University of Alabama Stormwater Management Program. You can help provide cleaner, safer water for everyone. Help the Stormwater Management Program today by calling 348-5905.
Don't have an opinion? We've got you covered. Current news, political updates, special interviews, music, and celebrity trash. All from a chick's point of view.
You haven't heard talk radio until you've heard Naked Revolution, stripping down to the bare essentials. Every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. here on New Rock 90.7.
This is Sarah. You're listening to WVUA Tuscaloosa, New Rock 90.7.
Rock 90.7. Welcome back to the Graham Flanagan Show. And Ben, since you're in the studio, I was going to ask you what we were talking about earlier. What would you rank higher on your best of list? Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or The Passion?
Eternal Sunshine. By a star. You know what I'm saying? I give, you know, with our grading system, I give Passion 3 out of 4.
Okay.
And I give Eternal Sunshine 4. I think it's just... Like Scalici said in his review, it's just brilliant. It's a masterpiece. And it's just, I wouldn't call it simple, but in a lot of ways it is. It's just a short romance, you know what I mean? A short, simple love story with characters we can identify with. And it's just executed so well with great writers and directors, and especially actors in this case. And it's just something, like you said, you can just turn it on, sit back, and enjoy it.
Well, I look forward to seeing it again. And I believe that the aspect ratio is 1.85. Did you confirm that on IMDb? I think it was. I believe it was 1.85.
I'm pretty sure. I don't think IMDb has its technical specs up yet.
Really? Well, it seemed 1.85 in the theater.
Every Charlie Kaufman movie has been 1.85 so far, so I would expect it to
be so. Yeah, that's true. It's true. Well, Matt, we've got, you know, I'm sure since last week there's been a lot of deals going on, so why don't you just go ahead and hit us with the top story.
We got a couple of good ones. You mentioned before we went to the break there, Mel Gibson has mentioned that he's interested in doing another religious-related picture. This would be a project based on the Revolt of the Maccabees, which is, of course, the event that is the basis for the Jewish holiday Hanukkah. And it's a story of a family that sort of hoards itself up and is under attack, and they survive it. And so it would be part war movie, part family drama, part religious inspiration. So, the immediate reaction, I think, from the Anti-Defamation League was, we don't need you to make a movie about our story. So, you know, some resentment there. I think it could, you know, as commercial as it sounds for Mel Gibson to come out, I know some people are shaking their heads already thinking, you know, he's made a lot of money off this religious movie. He's going to go exploit another religion and do it again.
Exploit another religion.
I think it sounds like it could really be a good movie. I think it's probably a story worth telling. And I think he's obviously, you know, it sounds like a story that he would be good at telling, knowing his strengths as a filmmaker.
You know, it's up to the audience whether or not Gibson's going to make any money. It's their choice whether or not that he's going to make these millions of dollars. He put up the millions of dollars. I mean, he might have known that a lot of people would come and see it, but it's not, you know, he's not going to just magically get it back. Those people have to get their butts in the seats, and they're paying him the money. So anybody who's saying he's exploiting it is pretty much a hypocrite, because a lot of people who have been saying that about The Passion have seen The Passion. So I don't know where they're coming from.
Well, I'd say, you know, the guys, I haven't seen Man Without a Face, but he's two for two. Let him try any subject matter he wants.
Yeah, the guy's just trying to make movies, you know?
Yeah.
I think anybody of any background should make any movie they want to.
And you deserve to reap the benefits as an artist of whatever your art, you know, yields.
Yeah, artistic or financially. And, I mean, does a Jew need to make a movie about Jews? Since Mel Gibson was Catholic, was it appropriate for him to make The Passion? I don't think so. I think a Jew can make The Passion also, and you know, just tell your own story. You know, that's what Mel Gibson's trying to do. He's telling it from his his interpretation.
And you know,
in fact, one of the most highly regarded films about Jesus was actually made by an atheist, and it was Pasolini's Gospel of St. Matthew.
Mm. I was also going to say that Forrest Whitaker directed Hope Floats, so it's a crazy world. So what else, man? Keep it going.
We've got, obviously, there's a lot of this, you know, we've been talking about this Batman project. Wolfgang Peterson, who was originally being talked about when this whole Batman versus Superman movie was being thrown around a couple of years ago.
And he bailed out to make Troy.
Right, bailed out to make Troy, and it also became apparent that Superman and Batman were going to be made into their own movies. Well, he has now said he's interested in doing this project again, regardless of the new Batman movie coming out, and that he would do this with Eric Bana and Orlando Bloom, who he's just worked with.
Orlando, in which roles, respectively?
He did not say. I personally think if I'm going to put those in, Orlando Bloom doesn't fit my view of either one of them, but I guess you'd have to put Eric Bana in at Superman. Yeah, he's sort of more the square chin.
That is kind of an interesting choice for Superman, now that you mention it. I think he might be a decent Superman, Eric Bana.
I mean, I think it would be funny to see Orlando Bloom as Superman.
Orlando Bloom is just I think he's a cool, I think he's a good action hero in Lord of the Rings. I think he's a tad... effeminate is such a harsh word nowadays. I think he's just a tad bit not masculine enough to be a superhero. I buy him as an elf, as an action hero there. But I don't.
What about Pirates of the Caribbean? Elizabeth.
I will protect you to the end, Elizabeth.
Even there, you know, he's a little bit... He's not the manliest character in that movie, even considering that Johnny Depp has eyeliner on.
Yeah, it's true. Who is? You know, it's not Jonathan Pryce, that's for sure.
Also this week, Pierce Brosnan finally came out and said he was going to do the last James Bond movie. But before that happened, it was sort of thrown into doubt who was going to do this next Bond movie. And I guess they used the opportunity to come up with his successor. And they say they have it narrowed down to between Clive Owen, who was the guy that I heard had it a few months ago. Clive Owen, who was star of the BMW films. Who
King Arthur. King Arthur.
I enjoyed those.
He's playing King Arthur in the new movie.
Right.
Yes. The
also, the other two candidates would be Ewan McGregor and Orlando Bloom. What do you know? Neither of those two, I think would make a very good...
Ewan McGregor might need to stay put where he is.
I don't know if either of those would make a great James Bond, but...
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation. I saw Hugh Jackman was up for it. Rupert Everett was up for it at one point. I've read messages.
Speaking of staying put and Hugh Jackman, I was on. I was walking off of... it was on Broadway, I believe, or near Broadway this past week. We're walking to dinner, and, you know, we're in the theater district, and walked past the theater where Hugh Jackman is starring in his play. I forget what it's called. I think it's called A Boy from Oz or something like that. And he's got this huge marquee and this huge, you know, cutout of Hugh Jackman. He's got, like, his shirt unbuttoned all the way, and he's doing this number right here. He's, like, smiling. I laughed, and I was like, all of a sudden, I'm not as scared of your adamantium claws, Hugh. You know, I don't know. So I don't know about Hugh Jackman.
I hosted the Tony Awards.
Yeah.
Do you think that James Bond, the actor, necessarily has to be English?
Well, look, right now, all I got to say, if I was going to hire a British person to do it, you know, just keep it alive, Christian Bale.
True.
You know, let him age a little bit, because James Bond traditionally has been, you know, kind of a closer to 40, older guy, you know. So I don't know about all these young, I mean, this isn't James Bond Jr. after all.
No, but they are consciously trying to, I think you saw with the last movie, they're trying to go for the Gen X. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I thought the last James Bond movie was one of the worst I've ever seen.
I haven't seen it.
And Ebert loved it. Ebert gave it 4 stars. He said it was the best James Bond movie made in years.
Ebert gave Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets 4 stars.
I know Ebert had some bad calls, but I like to think he's more consistent than most of the other ones. And I just didn't like the last James Bond film at all. I thought it was really cheesy. It used CG, you know, stunt instead of stunt people. You know, that's just not what James Bond is about.
Mm. Have you seen Die Another Day yet, Ben?
I kind of stopped going after World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of fun with that either. Or Tomorrow Never Dies, for that matter. But I am a GoldenEye fan.
Oh, I thought GoldenEye was great.
Rules.
GoldenEye is tight. And the video game, of course. You can't beat that. But yeah, keep on going, Scalici.
Now we get to the really big ones here. Steven Spielberg and Tom Cruise will be pairing up again to do War of the Worlds, a remake. All right, I don't know if it's ever been put on film, actually. Has it?
I believe they might have done some TV stuff, but radio.
They're going to come at this thing with a big budget, so. I don't know if Cruise is I know he's producing it with Spielberg. I've yet to hear if he's going to star in it or not. Next, we got Robert Rodriguez's new project. For fans of Rodriguez and Tarantino, they seem to go together. He's actually co-directing and co-writing this thing with a guy named Frank Miller, who I'm not familiar with.
He's a comic book. If it's the same guy that does graphic novels.
I believe so, actually.
Did a Batman. I think Batman Year One, maybe. I might be wrong on that. But
So they're doing a film called Sin City. And right now, they have just assembled probably the cast that will beat the Batman cast. We've got your boy Leonardo DiCaprio in there. We got Bruce Willis, Elijah Wood, Kate.
Who are you, Tony Kornheiser or like Wilbon?
anyway, Bruce Willis, Elijah Wood, Kate Bosworth, Brittany Murphy, kind of random thrown in there. And right now, those are all signed already. Benicio del Toro and Maria Bello are both in talks.
So A-list.
I'm fans of both of those.
Really? Maria Bello. Was she in Payback?
Yes.
She the blonde.
She's in Payback. She's in The Cooler
and Secret Window.
Secret Window.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Also, Autofocus, which is a sort of...
I haven't seen that.
...overlooked Greg Kinnear film.
Yeah,
it
imagine
was pretty good.
Paul Schrader, right? Does anybody pull out their tooth with pliers?
It's a little graphic. It's over the top.
Did you hear that Paul Schrader that... did you see that headline of that article that he was disturbed by The Passion?
Paul Schrader?
Of all people, Paul Schrader?
Yeah, Mr.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I don't know. I was flipped to Affliction. That James Coburn won the Oscar for, and it was the scene where Nick Nolte's character is pulling his tooth out in front of a mirror slowly, and I think it's rough, man. It's not the Scooby Doo movie, that's for sure. But
a couple of them. We talked about Mission Impossible 3 last week, and them casting Philip Seymour Hoffman as the bad guy. This week they announced that Frank Darabont is writing the screenplay. Who has done The Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile and The Majestic. So an interesting little choice there. He's also actually...
Good.
Darabont has been... He's done some work on the Indiana Jones. He actually wrote a lot of the Indiana Jones films.
His script was rejected by Lucas.
Right.
Not...
But it was apparently a lot was taken from it, you know, as far as tone and things like that. So he's been writing for a long time and has very few credits to show for it, but he's...
Yeah, he's probably doctored
done
a lot
of good
scripts.
Work. Yeah.
He's like the Robert Towne of the modern age.
Right. And one more good one, and I only threw this one in there because I'm such a big fan of the original Alien film, which I think is probably one of the best sci-fi and horror films.
Yeah, it was together. Was that the scariest? Was that your scariest of all?
It wasn't my number one, I don't think. I think I put The Shining on top, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what I put on top.
What was Alien?
Maybe, I don't know.
Was it the ring?
No, it was not the ring. That was just up there. That was on the top 10. Oh man, don't make me pull out.
I'm not hating, man. What?
I'm gonna go see that Madonna movie just so I can
swept
call
away?
You out on it.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Anyway,
I can't wait. You'll love it.
Anyway, Ridley Scott had an interview this week, and he mentioned that after this Alien versus Predator movie pans out. If it does fairly well at the box office, then Ridley Scott has said that he'd be interested in doing another Alien installment, directing another Alien installment for Fox with somehow using Ripley, who has been killed, then cloned and killed again. So, even though it's fun to make fun of. Keep using the same ideas over and over again. I think Ridley Scott doing another Alien movie, I'm up for that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think he should try to return to the visual style that he, you know, you started to see with Blade Runner and with that movie. And you know, I think that's a good idea.
I'd like to see him do some sci-fi and some edgier stuff than he's been doing lately. Even though I did like Matchstick.
I did too. I finally got to see that. I thought it kicked ass.
You know, Alien was great and everything. And if we're going to stick to this Alien talk, I think we should all recognize, and I think we all know what Alien movie was superior to all, and that was Jim Cameron's Aliens.
There are many fans, just like the Godfather 2 crowd, who say that Aliens is the superior film. I'll give it. Aliens is a great movie. It's a different kind of movie than the first one. It's much more of an action movie than the first one. The first one is a lot more of a horror movie. You know, it's running down hallways and running away. It's essentially sort of a Michael Myers movie in space.
Yeah.
And they have different functions. I will agree with you. The Jim Cameron movie is great, but you know, I sort of hold a special place in
my
heart.
Well, I'll go ahead and give props to Alien 3, which a lot of people often hate on. I think it's great, and apparently the studio took it away from him and recut it. The version that stands as it is terrific.
It's on DVD now, is it not?
Yeah, with the whole Alien quadrilogy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that they've restored all the footage that.
Yeah,
Fincher...
you can if you buy the big box set of Alien films. There supposedly is the David Fincher's original cut.
So he came back and recut it. That's nice. Oh, I like to see that. So I'm a big fan, and that was I got to see that movie. It was rated R. I got to see it at the theater when it came out, and that was a major experience.
Well, don't forget about Alien versus Predator coming out here pretty soon.
Is this from Paul W.S. Anderson?
Yeah, he's doing this.
So he's doing this and the Resident Evil movie also?
Is he doing the sequel?
I'm not sure. I might have to check. I'm not positive.
He dropped out of Mortal Kombat to do this. Mortal Kombat 3.
Really?
Yeah, so This better be good.
You know, as cheesy as they are, I'm sort of a fan of this whole let's put two characters from different franchises in a movie together.
Well,
I think it's campy and it's fun. I actually enjoyed Freddy vs. Jason far more than I enjoyed any of the movies in any of their series.
I just remember the Alien vs. Predator arcade game. I remember it being awesome. And just thinking, God, this movie would be great. And my dream's coming true. But from the look of the preview, I mean, it could be disappointing, but it could be along the lines of Freddy versus Jason. I haven't given that a chance yet, so
it's actually pretty fun. You know, it's obviously not meant to be taken as a horror film at all.
I want to see who wins. Yeah.
Well, let me make a clarification that Paul W.S. Anderson, he's not directing the next Resident Evil movie. It's Alexander Witt.
All right.
So I guess he dropped out of the Resident Evil sequel to do the Alien versus Predator. So there you go.
Well, Paul Anderson's on something else too, isn't he? After this Alien business, would you check that out?
I have to check.
He's got some decent movies on his resume.
He wrote the script for the new Resident Evil, though.
Yeah, he did the first Mortal Kombat movie, which was cool.
Oh yeah,
and
Event Horizon.
Event Horizon,
which is underrated in my opinion.
Pretty scary stuff in that movie.
Have you seen Event Horizon?
Yeah, I mean it's definitely a. Give you some nightmares.
One of those endings that kind of got away from the rest of the film.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
I remember the first time I went and saw that one. I remember getting a few chills looking over my shoulder in the theater. It was pretty scary.
Some good, nice special effects on that one too. Kathleen Quinlan. That's yeah, you got anything else, though?
I was going to actually ask you guys if you'd heard of this coffee and cigarettes movie that's going to get released in May. It's, I believe the guy, yeah, look it up on IMDb.
Yeah, Ben has the skinny on it.
Yeah, it's a Jim Jarmusch,
right.
Jim Jarmusch movie.
I've heard you guys mention his name before. I'm not familiar.
He directed Down by Law. I wouldn't call it his most famous movie. I guess it's up there, like Stranger Than Paradise, Down by Law, Mystery Train, Dead Man with Johnny Depp. He did all those, very quirky, some black and white films that are really big on the underground Hollywood scene. Not really independent, but just very, kind of very beatnikish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, these are apparently sort of filmed conversations.
Yeah.
I imagine sort of in the same vein as... Waking Life, only, you know, not animated.
Absolutely. There's several vignettes between very famous people playing themselves, kind of.
Right. It mentioned Bill Murray, Kate Blanchett, Steve Buscemi, the White Stripes, both of them will be in this.
Yes, there's a French trailer up now on the internet, actually. And,
did you check it out? How's it look?
Absolutely. It looks really cool. Great photography.
Cinematography returning to his Down by Law roots.
That's what I want to know. I don't know for sure if it's Robbie Mueller that's working on it, the cinematographer for Down by Law, who is incredible when he
works
on it.
Yes, he is. It's him and four and three other people. And one of them is Ellen Kuras, who shot Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Well, if Robbie Mueller's on this project, then we're in for a treat with photography wise, because he's got talent and he displays it fully in Down by Law, a beautiful, beautifully photographed movie.
Up there with Manhattan, definitely.
Manhattan, Schindler's List, Citizen Kane, put it up there with any of that.
Yeah. Celebrity, also.
Yeah, but the trailer looks really, really cool. Like, Tom Waits and Iggy Pop have a conversation.
The RZA, isn't it? Also.
yeah, true. Jack and Meg Wyatt have a kind of a fantastic conversation. Like, it seems kind of like a fantasy. That there's some special effects in it, I think. Bill Murray and is it Wu-Tang Clan? I know RZA, and several others. Steve Buscemi. Stephen Wright, that's who it is.
Awesome.
Stephen Wright, and it was another comedian, and I can't. It's slipping my mind right
Alfred
now.
Molina, who I saw his name on the marquee while I was up in the Apple. He's in Fiddler on the Roof right now.
Yeah, well, but it should be pretty interesting because Jim Jarmusch is such a strange director. But
I thought I saw Jim Jarmusch at that Orson Welles double feature, because this is this person with real white bushy hair. But I never got a chance to see if it was, so it may have been. He might have been there getting some inspiration. I wouldn't be surprised.
I did read about that in the CW, man. I got to say, I'm pretty envious of that, to have access to all those prints that you can't even find them on VHS.
Yeah. Well, We were trying to emulate that in a way at the Ferg for a while there, but you know what happened there.
Well,
no appreciation.
Yeah, never say die and stuff like that, you know.
No. We're going to try to work it out for the summer and the fall, of course.
Yeah, well.
And get some something happening down there. But let's take a break, and we'll come back and discuss what we've been watching on our own time this over the past week. And spring break's coming up. Scalise, you going to take it back to the motherland or what? What's the deal? Back to the boot?
If by the motherland you mean my mom's house, then yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No Cancun for you?
I'm taking it easy this spring break. I'm taking a year off from the beach.
Really? Well, I'm gonna relax, of course, watch the Godfather trilogy, and try to finish this Peter Biskin book. And we'll talk about that when we get back. And you, Ben, you're going to Belize, isn't that correct?
Awesome.
Go clubbing up in Belize, so that ought to be fun. But keep it here on the Graham Flanagan Show. We'll be right back. You know you want to listen.
Margaritas, monkeys, mariachi, and movies, so many things start with the letter M.
Let's not forget Marsfield Journal, the university's undergraduate literary and art magazine.
We publish everything from poems to photography, from fiction to graphic design, from essays to artwork.
Submitting has never been easier. All it takes is an email or a phone call.
You can call the Marsfield Journal office at 348-7264 to find out more information on how to submit your work.
Marsfield Journal.
We put the M in M.
At New Rock 90.7, our primary purpose is to train students to become disc jockeys.
Over the years, we've had some real winners.
But even the best DJs had to start out as scrubs. That's where you come in.
You can join the New Rock team and bend Tuscaloosa to your musical will.
New Rock 90.7 is now accepting DJ applications. You can pick one up in the Heart of Glass Studios in Reese Viper Hall.
Or online at www.newrock907.com.
And don't be afraid.
We are not a cult.
X this. It's New Rock 90.7.
Hey, this is Big Joe, and you're listening to WVUA FM, Tuscaloosa, New Rock 90.7.
This tax season, you could fish around in your mailbox looking for the refund that everyone you know already got. Or you can e-file and get your refund in half the time. So log on to aboutefile.com or tell your tax preparer to e-file for you. IRS e-file. Consider it done.
New York 90.7. Welcome back to the Graham Flanagan Show. Winding down here tonight, as we were preempted for the first hour by softball, but no problem at all with that, of course. Whenever Jared Shadrach asks me for a favor, I agree and acquiesce to whatever it is he's requesting, because he's the man. So, Graham Flanagan Show, got Ben Flanagan in the studio, and Matt Scalici. All of the Crimson White, Matt of MattOnMovies.com, on the World Wide Web, of course. And now we're going to do a little segment that we started last week where we go around a little trio here and we discuss something that we think that people might want to take a look at, something that's impressed you over the past week. I talked about this earlier. Hope you had some time to think about something you might want to discuss. Scalise, why don't you go ahead and start us off here?
I've actually been... taking advantage of the Criterion Collection editions of all of the Fellini films, or as many as I could get my hands on. They apparently have most of his great works anyway.
Such as
the last one I just watched today was M.R. Cord, which is his last, considered to be his last great film.
What did you think?
I'm a big Fellini fan. I think he's It can be a little, the first time you watch it, you know, as an American moviegoer, it's a little off-putting because you don't know what to look for in it. But